This episode contains adult themes and is not appropriate for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, the world. This is They Will Kill, a true crime podcast. I am Courtney Eck.
And I'm Sadie Eck.
And you know what, guys? It's Sadie's night, so everybody get excited because everybody wants to hear Sadie's voice today and every day.
And every day.
Instead of my two cats fighting in a gravel voice, so you're welcome.
You're so
Unfortunately,
funny.
I'll be back next week with gravel cats.
I think our voices are very similar, and you do not sound like gravel cats.
Well, after 3 years, you'd think that I would adjust to hearing the sound of my own voice as I edit. And
it doesn't happen.
No. Mm-hmm. In fact, things get a lot worse. So if you're thinking about starting a podcast, just be forewarned. You will hate everything about your voice, the way you talk, the way your mouth moves, and you breathe. So that's fun. But it's worth it. We love you guys, and we love telling these stories. So what story are we telling today, Sadie?
Well, this is Killer on the Run, The Terrible Murder of Jason Bass.
Ooh.
On the evening of August 31st, 1990, 27-year-old Adam Emery was picking up dinner with his wife, Elena, and Elena's sister and brother-in-law. They had decided to go out that night for an early celebration of Adam and Elena's second wedding anniversary. They grabbed some food at their favorite seafood stand at the Rocky Point Amusement Park on the coast of the Narragansett Bay in Warwick, Rhode Island. They found a spot in the amusement park overlooking the water and decided to stop there and have a car picnic in Adam's black 1985 Ford Thunderbird. Just before 9 p.m., as they were finishing their meal, a car parked in the same lot struck the rear left side of Adam's Thunderbird, causing damage to the taillight and bumper. The car then took off. It's important to note that this car was Adam's prized possession, and he always kept it in immaculate condition.
I bet. Are you kidding? Mm-hmm. 1985 Ford Thunderbird. Are you kidding?
Right. And it's this is 1990.
Yeah.
Right? So it's
I know
pretty
exactly
much brand new.
Who this guy is. Yep.
Yes. Yep. He's 27.
Was every babysitter we ever had, he was their boyfriend and he was also our older cousins.
Exactly. Yes. Yep. It was a busy night in the area, and when they looked up to see what had happened, they saw the car speeding away and turning a corner behind some buildings. Both Adam and Elena were enraged, and Elena insisted Adam take off after the car. When they turned the corner, Elena pointed to a Ford LTD and told Adam it had been the one that hit them. They chased the car out of the park, and Adam managed to pull up next to the LTD and started yelling at the driver to pull over. Inside the, quote, shabby reddish-brown 1975 Ford LTD was 20-year-old Jason Bass, his cousin Josh, and a friend of theirs who was sitting in the back seat. The young guys were also out enjoying the night and had no idea why Adam was pulling up next to them, screaming to pull over. Instead of doing what Adam was demanding, Jason tried to drive off, but Adam managed to get his car in front of Jason's, forcing him to stop. Before Adam got out of the car, Elena handed him a large military knife and said to use it to defend himself if he needed to.
Elena, why are you stirring up shit, girl?
Right?
God. Yeah.
Adam then approached the car and opened Jason's door. When Jason saw the knife, he was terrified and tried to drive away again, but Adam managed to grab a hold of the car door and started stabbing the knife in the direction of Jason.
What?
I know. One of these stabs landed directly into Jason's heart.
Why? How?
No.
This is the epitome of that escalated quickly.
Right?
Holy shit.
Yes. This caused Jason to stop the car and then bleed to death in front of a crowd of horrified onlookers.
Oh, wow. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Jason was rushed to the hospital, but sadly died before he arrived. In just a matter of a few terrible minutes, one man was dead, and the other was arrested and charged with murder. As detectives investigated the crime scene, they were able to tell right away that the paint found on Adam's car did not match the car Jason had been driving. This would later be confirmed by forensic testing. Adam had not only chased the wrong car, but then he also killed a totally innocent person who had no idea why he was being chased down, yelled at, and then stabbed.
That is dizzying. I'm dizzy.
Yes. I mean, it's bad enough.
Had been the
exactly.
One.
Yes. I was going to say, we all do have all done stupid shit. And the fact that you could just be like chased down and stabbed to death for it is really terrible. Jason Bass was born in Providence, Rhode Island on July 22nd, 1970. He grew up in a large family with five brothers and one sister. His mom was half Cherokee and his father was mostly from a Native American heritage as well, mostly Cherokee and Mohican. Jason and his siblings were very proud of their family's history and heritage, something Jason would talk about often. Jason dropped out of high school at 16 and had plans to one day open his own restaurant. He spent the next few years working at different restaurants, including Burger King, and just a few days before he was killed, he had just quit his job as the food concession manager at Rocky Point Amusement Park. He was only 20 years old, too young to even really get started with his own life before it was brutally taken away.
It sucks.
Yeah. Only Adam was charged with Jason's murder, and he was sent to jail to await trial where he would stay for the next 8 months before his family was able to post bail. Once he was released from jail, he lived his life for 2 years before his trial would begin. During this time, he never denied he was the one who stabbed Jason, but he maintained he did it in self-defense. Adam was eventually offered a plea deal in exchange for the lesser charge of voluntary manslaughter and a prison term of just 5 to 7 years, but he refused to accept the deal.
Who is this dick? God. Who raises these people?
I don't know.
They can just fly into a rage at the, like, oh my God. And then just claim ugh, mm-hmm, yuck. Mm-hmm. I hate him.
I know. He believed a jury would easily find him not guilty. His trial began on November 5th, 1993, and would only last 5 days. Adam told the jury he had not intended to harm Jason Bass that night. He just wanted the person who had damaged his car to be held responsible. He said after he got out of his car and opened Jason's door, he told Jason, quote, "I just want to talk. You hit my car." But Josh, who was a passenger in Jason's car, said Adam shouted, quote, "I'm going to kill you."
Give me a break.
Adam also noticed that his brother-in-law had gotten out of the car to help and was now standing in front of Jason's car to keep him from leaving. Adam said he became concerned that Jason was going to run down his brother-in-law, so he leaned into the LTD to turn off the ignition. Jason, who no doubt was terrified, tried to get away from Adam, so he put his car in reverse and started moving in a, quote, frantic backward zigzag, dragging Adam 1,300 feet as he hung from Jason's door.
Wait, is this is true or this is what mm-hmm. Adam is claiming? Okay.
I'm pretty sure. This is what Adam is claiming, but I also think that this is what
is actually true.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and, you know, major flaw in your defense, bro. There's like 200 people watching this happen. So, mm-hmm. like.
Yeah. One, let go of the car door. Don't get in front of the car. Let the car go. I mean, like, there's 1,000 things, other choices you could make.
Mm-hmm. It's not self-defense if you are already attacking an innocent person.
Right. If you were the one approaching the car mm-hmm. and putting yourself in this danger and standing in front of, like.
The self-defense is driving away to get away from you. That's self-defense. There you go.
Yes. Like if he was just standing on the sidewalk and Jason ran him over with the car and he, you know, like that.
Right. That's self-defense.
You would need to defend yourself from that. But at this point, Jason is just trying to get away from this maniac with a knife.
Yep.
So as he's being dragged, Adam said he was now afraid for his own life and felt he had to make Jason stop the car, so he started stabbing towards Jason with the knife. Prosecutors portrayed Adam as a guy who cared more about his car than a human life and told the jury that he had stabbed Jason in anger, wanting him to die for what he'd done. But the defense said that wasn't true at all. Adam was a nice guy who'd never been in any sort of trouble before that terrible night. He had been afraid for his life and did what he thought he needed to do to keep himself and his family safe. They had multiple character witnesses testify, including a friend of Adam's who was a police officer and the president of Adam's company. They spoke highly about Adam and talked about his, quote, integrity, efficiency, and organization, and his basic goodness as a person.
He couldn't possibly have killed somebody. That guy's organized as hell. Have you ever seen his Excel spreadsheets?
His, what are the Rolodex?
Yeah, immaculate, color-coded even. I can just picture this so clearly, and not to disparage people from Rhode Island, I feel like I can say this because this is our family. Sadie and I, our mom's side is from the East Coast, and not specifically Rhode Island, but Connecticut and Massachusetts and like everything surrounding it. And yeah, I just feel like our cousins who are always like getting in little dust ups and stuff and coming home wearing like neck braces and being like, I'm wicked mad at that guy for blah, 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 you know, whatever. Like, it just,
it's that,
it's 100% our older cousins, right? Yes. Yeah.
His boss talked about how skilled he was when dealing with irate customers, because remember, Adam's the customer service manager or whatever at a plastics company. Always staying calm and polite. His friend testified about a time he was driving with Adam when Adam suddenly pulled off to the side of the road when he saw a homeless man. He got out of the car to see if the man needed help, and the two became friends. Adam helped him out on multiple occasions. Despite these nice remarks, reporters at the time who were covering the trial all mentioned Adam's complete lack of remorse, saying he never looked sad during the trial and never once said he was sorry for what he did that night. Adam was the type of guy who was used to getting his way and often got what he wanted. He grew up in an upper middle class family, graduated high school, and then graduated from Rhode Island College. After getting his degree, Adam took a white-collar job with a local plastics manufacturing company where he worked as the customer services manager. I guess I didn't mention that before, but that's what he did, that he was so good at and organized. During this time, Adam met Elena at a local disco club, and the two fell in love very quickly. Elena and her family had immigrated to the United States from Italy when she was young. Her parents worked hard and were eventually able to buy a nice home in a nice area of Rhode Island. Elena was the bookkeeper for a construction company while she worked towards her college degree. She and Adam got married and moved into an apartment inside a house her parents owned. Those who were close to the couple said it was clear that Elena was the one in charge of the relationship. They had been raised in two very different families. Elena came from a much more boisterous, outspoken Italian family. They were not afraid to tell it like it was, while Adam was raised in a much more laid-back and quiet family. In one example of how Elena's family behaved, Jason's brother told reporters about a time just a few days after Jason was killed when his wife and mother went to a local thrift store to buy Jason a suit to be buried in.
What?
So Jason's mother, her son just was murdered.
Oh, God, sorry.
That's okay. Got so Jason's brother is telling the story.
Yes. Got it.
Right. Jason's mom and his sister-in-law go to a thrift store to pick out a suit to bury their family member in. While buying the suit, they told the cashier it was for a family member who had been murdered and then told the story as they understood it. As Jason's mom was telling her story, she said that an irate woman was suddenly in her face screaming at her to tell the real truth about what Jason had done.
You're kidding.
No. It turned out that one of Elena's sisters just so happened to be shopping at the same store that day and overheard the conversation.
If you hear a thump, it's because I've passed out.
You
are kidding.
No.
Oh my God, what is wrong with these people?
She demanded Jason's mother explain that Jason had dragged Adam with his car and that's why Jason had been killed.
Oh my God.
His poor mom. The poor mom.
Nope. You just don't recover from that. I could never recover from that.
No. Just the fact that you have to go buy a suit to bury your son in is unrecoverable from. You will never recover from that. But then to be traumatized. Yes. And then the trauma of being screamed at and blamed.
Nope.
It's just so sad.
Yep.
So despite the intensity of Elena and her family, the different dynamics seemed to work for the pair, and Adam seemed willing to do as his wife asked. Before his arrest for Jason's murder, he had never been in any kind of legal trouble, and his mother would tell reporters that she had always been proud of him for never once getting in trouble at school when he was a boy. There was an article I read that said that she, it's like to make herself feel better, she wrote a list of all of the good things that he had done in his first 27 years of life.
Wow.
To like...
Yeah.
I mean, prove and, that he wasn't a monster for killing Jason,
right,
or like,
right.
I don't know.
And I'm just going to take a big leap and speculate that, I mean, it really sounds like Elena had a lot to do with this and probably had a lot of influence over him. And mm-hmm. it feels very much like a, you know, don't let them talk to you like that, mm-hmm. you know? And I mean, maybe he was a good person and then he married the wrong girl, mm-hmm. you know, not to put all of it on her, but it, I've seen, you know, that happens. It just...
Right. Well, I also think he was, on his own, was an entitled sort of person, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so he never had to...
Right.
He probably never had to work for much. He never really had to confront anybody. There, you know, like, no conflict resolution or, like, he just always got his way.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, if we're going to stereotype that sort of person in the 90s in Rhode Island... You know, you just kind of do what you want. You get what you want. You get away with it.
Yep.
You know, and so I think that you're right. He probably wasn't necessarily a violent type of person or like angry. But he also loved his wife and she was like, oh no, And he was like, okay, I guess.
Yeah, that is a very good point. That type of those personalities coming together.
Right.
It's just,
Yeah,
where he doesn't understand consequences, mm-hmm. and he's like, I've got to defend my girl or what, I can't let him talk to me like that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my baby.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's my Thunderbird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. So the young couple was just getting started, but seemed to be well on their way to living the upper middle class American dream.
Yeah.
In an article written about this case for the Washington Post by William F. Powers, which... is a really mm-hmm. good name for mm-hmm. a Washington Post journalist.
Yeah, he knew he needed to throw that F in there mm-hmm. to seal the deal.
Yes. He points out something that I was not aware of in the social structure of Rhode Island residents in the early 90s, and I'm dying to know if this is still true.
I can't wait.
Quote, they were just starting out, but they were beginning to acquire the accoutrements of success. In the file on Adam's case, now stored in the Providence Superior Court building, there is an envelope containing the physical exhibits from the trial. In addition to the knife, the morgue photo of Jason, and some other items are photos of Adam's car. Anyone who knows Rhode Island can't help but notice the license plate number, AE-70.
Here, is this the redlining stuff?
I don't think so. What's the redlining stuff?
I've got nothing. It just like sparked a vague memory of... something I read or saw a long time ago that was like, if you live in a certain place and you have a certain license plate, then cops know you live at a certain part of town or something.
Oh, that is sort of what this is, yes.
Uh-huh.
Similar, but uh-huh. I don't know. I don't know about redlining, calling it that, but yes.
Yeah.
So here, license plates have great social significance. So great, the desirable tag numbers are actually passed down in families and argued over among heirs. I'm still quoting the article. The ranking system is unofficial and complex, but widely understood. Basically, the best plate is one bearing a low number. If there are any letters, it's preferable that they correspond to the owner's initials. A good plate generally signifies that the owner or someone in his family once had a connection in the state government, which assigns the plates. Adam's plate, which he had obtained through a friend in the governor's office, was quite desirable in that it bore his initials and a relatively low number. Even better, he got Elena a plate to match it, which was EE-70. Also in the envelope with the photos is a clear plastic pouch containing the tiny spiral notebook on which, that fateful night, Elena had correctly recorded the license plate number of Jason's car, AV-439. A tag utterly lacking in prestige. It was also reported that the class system was apparent in the courtroom as well, and that Adam and Elena's relatives clearly regarded Jason Bass's family as social inferiors, and that, quote, there was a noticeable disdain between the families in the courtroom.
This
but mostly so... just the perpetrators' families towards the victims' family.
Right. Right.
Which, like, believe what you want mm-hmm. as far as whether, like, how, why Adam did what he did. The family is not responsible in any way at all for any of this. They just lost their child. Like, period. There isn't, like, the fact that you could be hateful towards them.
Yep. But that's what we do, right? You know, that's what mm-hmm. people do. They have the ability to just disregard entire classes of people as dangerous or less than or dispendable mm-hmm. or dispendable, expendable and disposable, put in one word, dispendable, you know? And so, yeah, they are like, yeah, that trash tried to hurt mm-hmm. our son and he had every right to do it. And, you know, and then to attack the mother of the victim at a thrift store. It says everything you need to know for her to have that much entitlement that mm-hmm. not only would she hear a grieving mother talk about that, rather than just like walk away, you know, she has to attack her mm-hmm. openly in mm-hmm. public. Mm-hmm. That's all you need to hear. Oh, yep. God. Just like Kyle Rittenhouse. You know, it's just that whole mentality. Like, ugh, don't even get me started. I will never stop. I will never stop.
I know. Well,
stop.
And I am, you know, I also feel like it's important to point out the fact that he was clearly of Native American heritage.
Yep.
And I'm sure that added to their willingness and ability to
disregard him.
Yeah. Yeah. My next sentence, too, is I say, I have to wonder, did Adam and Elena's family feel like Jason's family should have just sacrificed justice for their son because the perpetrator of the crime came from a wealthier family?
Yep.
That's what it feels like. It's like, Absolutely. How dare you try to hold our son responsible? You know, you just let it go. He's gone. Right. Like, why do you have to ruin his life, too?
Yes. Just like fucking Brock Turner and all that shit, too.
Yep.
You know, why would I ruin this young man's life over, what do you say, like 20 minutes of poor decision-making or whatever, you know? No. It's like, because he's a fucking monster. He's a bad person.
And guess what?
He deserves justice because he's wealthy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wealthy white boys don't get to not be held accountable for their bad behaviors. Like, what? So either way, it didn't matter for Adam in the end. When the trial was over, the jury deliberated, and on November 10th, which just so happened to be Adam's 31st birthday, the jury found him guilty of second-degree murder.
Oh, thank God. I was like mm-hmm. bracing myself for you to mm-hmm. say that he was not guilty.
No. This charge could carry a sentence of up to 30 years in prison. The Providence Journal reported that when the verdict was announced, Elena, quote, sitting behind her husband, squeezed her eyes shut and whispered, "It's my fault." Then her face grew tense, she clenched her teeth and uttered, "I'm going to kill someone. Mm-hmm. There's hell to be Mm-mm. paid." Mm-mm. She also spoke a few sentences to Adam that could not be heard by those sitting nearby. One of Elena's brothers yelled at the Basses, saying, quote, "You fucking scumbags, we're going to get you."
Oh, my God.
I know. The anger was so intense from Elena's family that the Basses were escorted home that day by police, and they had squad cars outside their house for a few days after trial just in case.
I have so much chills. This is, I need somebody get them on the phone.
No.
Now.
Explain yourselves.
I have some words to say. I need to speak to these people directly mm-hmm. with my rage and my physical body. I'm so mad. Oh, my God.
It's just completely inexcusable. So after the verdict was read, the judge allowed Adam to be released on bond once mm-hmm. again.
What?
Which I have never heard of. I'm sure it happens, but like, when does that happen?
No, it doesn't happen. You've been charged.
Yes.
You don't get to,
He has been found guilty. And the judge is like, cool, you're fine. Just peace out for a few months until the sentencing.
My God. I know.
Both Adam and Elena's family put up their life savings and three houses in total to secure the bond so that Adam could have the next few weeks with his wife before being sent to prison for a very long time. Adam and Elena left the courtroom together, Adam still showing no remorse for what had happened. And then just a few hours later, the couple's car was found abandoned on the Claiborne Pell Bridge, which sits 215 feet above the Narragansett Bay.
Nobody surprised, not one person.
Nope. The car was running and the doors were open. When authorities searched the car, they found the clothes that Adam and Elena had been wearing to court that day just a few hours earlier. Cash, cut-up credit cards, and Adam's driver's license was found lying on the passenger seat. They also found a receipt from a local sporting goods store. Authorities searched the area, including the water below, but found no sign of Adam or Elena. Witnesses came forward and said that after the couple left the courthouse at 3 p.m., they were spotted at the sporting goods store. While there, they bought sweatsuits, athletic socks, and 80 pounds of strap-on exercise weights. The cashier said that Adam was upset by the total amount of the purchase, thinking it was too expensive. They were then spotted eating at a Burger King nearby, and I kind of wonder if it was the Burger King where Jason had worked. At 4:50 p.m., motorists saw Adam and Elena standing next to their car on the bridge's walkway, but at 5:15 p.m., they had driven away. Their car was gone. At some point between then and 7 p.m., they returned to the bridge. Their car was reported abandoned at 6:53 p.m. If Adam and Elena jumped off the bridge, authorities expected their bodies to wash ashore within the next week or so. But when this didn't happen, police decided to investigate the possibility that they had faked their own deaths and were on the run.
These guys? No, they would never do that. Right.
The fact that Adam had been unhappy about the price of the supplies they'd bought at the sporting goods store, that their supposed last meal was at Burger King, where witnesses described them as happy. And the fact that the bridge was very busy during the time they were there, but no one witnessed them jump, all pointed authorities away from the idea that they died that night.
Thank God. God, it'd be so easy for them to just be like, yep, they definitely just killed themselves.
Knowing Elena talked to Adam in the courtroom after his guilty verdict, state police hired a lip reader to watch the videotape of the trial to try and decipher what she said. So the interpreter believed Elena told Adam, quote, "We will do what we originally said. You promised me. We should have done this before." As intriguing as this was, it still didn't make their plans better known. Was she talking about their plan to die by suicide or to run away? A few days after the couple went missing, both sets of parents received a letter in the mail from their children. Although they never directly said that they planned to take their own lives, part of the letter read, quote, "I was at a total loss about what happened in court today. We are not afraid to die, and we look forward to it, free at last. I write this letter with a clear conscience." Adam's mom told one reporter that despite the fact that Adam showed no remorse in court, he did feel, quote, "much private sorrow." For Adam and Elena's family, it wasn't just the fact that their children were missing and possibly dead, which is beyond awful, but to make matters worse, they had also given all of their money and houses to the courts in order to secure Adam's bond. If they didn't return, the court would seize their property and they would be left with nothing. So as the months passed, tips from people who believed they saw the couple would come into the police station and to the FBI, but no tip led to Adam and Elena. The story was featured on Unsolved Mysteries and America's Most Wanted. Many believed they had fled to Italy to live with family there.
Wow.
9 months would pass with no break in the case, but that would change on August 30th, 1994, when a fisherman fishing under the Claiborne Pell Bridge found part of a human skull in a fishing net. The skull was later positively identified as belonging to Elena Emery.
No.
She had extensive dental work done to the top row of her teeth, which the medical examiner said matched the skull found in the bay perfectly.
No way.
Yes. Later, two leg bones were also found, but they were unable to be positively identified as belonging to Adam or Elena. Jason's family had doubts about the skull and found it very suspicious that Elena's remains just so happened to be found on the same day her family's homes were going to be repossessed.
No. Oh, no. So many twists and turns.
I know. They also thought the condition of the skull found was not consistent with a body that would have only been in the water for 9 months. They thought the skull looked to be much older. Despite their doubts, Elena was pronounced dead, but there was still no sign of Adam. And I would think, I don't know, but I'm guessing that 9 months is plenty of time for a body to decompose in a huge bay, like a saltwater bay.
Yeah, but you would assume that there would still be some, I hate to say flesh attached, hair, yeah. You know, like something. Definite decomposition. But if it's just a straight up like clean skull, probably not, you know.
Right. I don't know. Missing the lower jaw, you know, so it was just the upper part of the skull. But right. I don't know either. So rumors swirled that Adam had agreed to Elena's plan to jump off the bridge, but either changed his mind at the last minute or never planned to jump in the first place. Uh-huh. Some people speculated that he pushed Elena off the bridge and then fled. Others think she jumped first and that he just didn't follow.
Right.
But if the accounts of their relationship dynamic are true, it doesn't seem likely to me that Adam would have pushed Elena off the bridge.
No.
They loved each other very much, and she was the boss of their relationship. I'm not sure Adam had it in him to run away without her. And I just personally, I'm speculating, I think it's most likely he's probably in the bay with her.
Yeah. Or they're both
Italy. There together, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. I don't, if it's not Elena's skull, then clearly, you know, but like if she is really dead and that's her skull, then I think Adam's there too.
I agree.
Yeah. The prosecutor on the case, after learning that Elena's skull had been found, told reporters, quote, jumping off the bridge is consistent with the murder. He's escaping responsibility once again.
Yes, absolutely. If he's gone, same thing. It's just this entitled sort of escape, like just face the consequences of your actions, dude.
Right. Yeah. It just feels like, I was trying to think of when Romeo and Juliet, the new one, came out.
But it's not. Like 94, 98.
Right.
Yeah.
So it wasn't quite 1990, but that's what it reminds me of, is like this young bullshit of they don't even know what they've done. And if we can't be together, then we're just jumping off a bridge. It's like, give me a fucking break. Like no concern for their parents, no concern for anybody but themselves and their selfish needs and their stupid behaviors. You know,
absolutely. Which is also a very 90s thing. Like everybody died at the end of every 90s movie. Just period. Fucking, even like the children, like My Girl. They just had, everyone had to die. Anybody who was in love, they're gonna die, right?
Yes.
Bridge to Terabithia. We're children. That might have been written in the 60s. I don't even know, but here you go, children. Nothing good ever comes of loving someone.
No.
You're going to die.
Right.
You're gonna like fall a tree off a tiny
stuck
bridge
in nothing.
Into the little creek and die.
Yes.
Yep. I wonder why we all have such like insecure attachments.
Oh, God.
I remember reading Bridge to Terabithia. I was always skipping ahead. Like I would check out the book from the library and skip ahead because I just couldn't wait. Nobody's surprised to hear that.
Right.
But I remember we had like reading time in fourth grade, and I was over in the corner, like you could spread out in the room, you know, which was such a cool thing to do.
Right.
And, being over in the corner with my best friend and like audibly gasping and being like, oh no, I have to know this by myself.
Oh no.
You know, like I have to, this is just information that I have to keep to myself until Wednesday or whenever the teacher reads this. Ugh.
Not fair. That's what you get. Just go ahead.
Overachiever.
Adam was declared legally dead in 2004, but the FBI hasn't closed his case and even announced in 2019 that there was a significant chance that he'd be caught in the next 5 years.
Wow. Whoa. Which based on seems, what?
Right. Like based off of what? And that's a very strangely like specific and also general statement to make. Like, how do you know? In 5 years? Why not tomorrow?
Exactly.
Why not 10 years? But 5 years. When asked about the murder and possible suicide, Elena's sister told reporters, quote, they were all in the wrong place at the wrong time. I truly believe that this was their destiny, all of them.
Ew.
They're
on the line.
I know, dude. I know. I truly believe that when God needs us more than our family needs us, he's going to find a way to take us. But she also said, it's just better to try not to make sense of what happened, saying, quote, if you try too hard, you'll go nuts.
You can try. You can try. Yep, you can try.
Yeah. And you can also know that we are human and we make stupid choices that lead to terrible consequences, and that your sister and her husband did that and they murdered somebody, and that they can feel really sad and sorry for that and make amends and do public service and go to prison for a while and then get out and then like hug Jason's mom and apologize and be the son that she lost for her and like donate your upper middle class money to charities that, you know, like you can make choices.
Well, and
don't
we know
add
why
to the crime.
It happened. It didn't happen because God wanted it to happen.
No.
It happened because your family's entitled and fucking terrible.
Yeah.
And like instead of looking at the situation you found yourself in and be like, oh, we should probably adjust how we parent and treat each other. Mm-hmm. You're like, I couldn't because I'll just go insane. Well, right. You should go insane.
Right.
That's the cross you bear for raising these children to think that they're better than other people.
Right.
And that people, like, oh, whoopsie-daisy. Yeah. Oh, well, God wanted them to die. Whoa, mm-hmm. Nothing I could do about that. Mm-hmm. Yes, tons and tons of things you could do about that.
Right.
Many things.
Right, starting with the fact that somebody hits your car and drives off and they're like, oh, man, that really pisses me off and that sucks. Ugh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, let's finish our beers and our car picnic and I'll go to the mechanic tomorrow and get a fix. Like, I hope
that
doesn't
maybe I'll call
again.
The police and file a report, or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, just bang it out. Get a little plungy plunge.
Yeah.
Good to go. You're back in business.
New taillight.
Psychos. You absolute psychopaths.
Mm-hmm.
And your family of psychopaths, please get them on the phone. Get them on the line. God, I'm going to get a call from one of Elena's sisters, like next week, and I'm not prepared. I gotta get ready.
I know.
Well, how old are they now? Probably
they're like
late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah. So if it was 1990 and this is 2020,
I can't take them.
30, 90.
Fuck.
Yeah.
I can't physically take them.
They might be in their 70s.
There's a better chance, but still, I'm not confident that
I think there's a lot of them. So,
yeah. Well,
and they probably have like kids and grandkids now. Yeah, we shouldn't probably try.
I'm gonna have to like really strategize if I'm gonna go up against this family. But
yeah, I don't think we're.
You know, somebody's got to. Somebody has got to.
Right. So after the trial, Jason's family mostly went quiet, as is often the case. Jason's life and story has been mostly forgotten by the public in the aftermath of his death. Let's not forget the completely innocent 20-year-old who was truly in the wrong place at the wrong time and paid the ultimate price for someone else's mistakes. The fact that life can turn on a dime like that without warning is unimaginable, and I am truly so sorry for him and his family. And this is the shit that keeps me up at night.
Big time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's unimaginable. It's just so easy to avoid situations like that. He actively did this. He actively killed this man.
Yeah.
Like this young man.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just so easy to not do that.
I know. I know. So, yeah, what do you guys think? So,
no,
still out there?
Is bad.
Is he in Italy?
Yes. For the next 5 years.
Is he in the Bay? Right. I know.
No, I don't
think that was 2019. So we're about up. On the 5-year mark of the FBI. I mean, they probably weren't expecting COVID to mess up their fugitive search plans. So we'll give them another couple of years. But I couldn't really find any specific information to say why. I read that Jason's family was really excited to hear mm-hmm. that maybe Adam could be found still.
Mm-hmm.
But not a lot of updates. I can't imagine that Adam Emery is top of the FBI most wanted list.
No. Exactly. But yeah, maybe there's some tips out of Italy, maybe something like that
mm-hmm.
would
maybe.
Be my guess. Because otherwise I cannot imagine that they would be even poking around at it. You know?
Right.
Doesn't seem like you said, doesn't seem like the highest priority to find them, especially after all this time.
Right.
But no, I don't think they're in the Bay. I don't think that was her skull. I'm just going to assume that they are long gone and hiding in the mountain somewhere eating fresh food. Like, it pisses me off.
I know. And I really do think they're both in the Bay. I do.
You do?
Yeah, I do. I think that they would, unless their family is just very good at keeping it quiet, you know, like I think that they would have been found by now. they needed their family. And unless there's just, and maybe there was enough support in Italy, but Adam in particular, his family, I think, would have been more likely to turn him in or not be able to keep it quiet or I don't know.
Well, maybe they're afraid of Elena's family.
That could
have you
be
ever
too.
Met an Italian family? Yeah, right. I'm not. I mean, I've openly just challenged them. So good luck to me.
But I never said her maiden name, her given last name.
I don't think that's going to matter. They're attacking mothers of dead children in thrift stores. God. So I think that they're going to find me, and I'm just going to have to face the consequences. But in this case, I think it's worth it because, my God, that is a level of entitlement. Oy.
Yeah.
And I know people like that. I definitely know people like that. I know people who have horrible children and defend them, you know, just to the death. Like I have a good friend. Well, we're not really good friends anymore, but we were for a while. And part of the reason we're not is because there's no consequences to her actions. She's got a lot of money and kids are nightmare people. Mm-hmm. And she just bails them out. And she said to me one time, but he's my baby. I'm like, I get it, but your baby needs to learn. He's like 24 and he's a fucking monster, you know?
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, I think all the time, we've talked about it all the time, raising two white boys.
Yep.
What am I going to do to help them understand consequences of actions? And I think a big part of that is to step back and let that unfold for them, especially as adults. I mean, but it has to start as kids too.
Yeah.
You know, like my youngest's preschool teacher emailed me the other day and was like, you know, he's not being real kind to the younger kids at school. And he's not in trouble, but it's just something I've been noticing and he's not really including them and blah, blah, blah. And she was writing to me pretty much apologizing for bringing this up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading this like, how much shit does she get?
Yep.
From parents for their 3, 4, and 5 year olds for being jerks. Like how much shit does she get from parents like, not my baby or whatever.
Yeah.
And I emailed her and I was like, thank you for letting me know. And, you know, we'll be working on it at home and please just keep me posted. Like, let me know what else. Like he's not a bad kid. He just needs to learn that hurts feelings. Right.
Yep. Yes.
But I have a choice as a parent. I could choose to defend him and tell her she's crazy.
Yep.
And that he gets to play with whoever he wants regardless or whatever. Or I could say, yeah, that's not how I want him to be. I'm going to teach him how to be, like, he doesn't have to play with everybody if he doesn't want to, but he can be kind about it. He can learn how to use his words or whatever.
Set his boundaries and
Yeah. But it turns out, like, no, his personality, I'm not surprised at all. And he's also, like, the leader of his gang now, which he was not last year. Like, he's really blossomed, which is good. But he is also, like, ganging up the other kids against the little ones. So it's an issue.
Right? He's, like, taking on some of his younger child.
Well, and I said, I think this is coming from how his older brother can treat him sometimes. So this is a conversation that I need to be having with both of my children.
Yes.
But the bottom line, that was something I thought about while having this interaction with the teachers. Like, I wonder how often parents are like, no, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I grew up with those kids. It's constant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it goes back to that, you know, family is important, but you have to look outside of your immediate circle. And there has to be value for life outside of the people who matter just to you.
Well, and my child doesn't matter more than another child just because he's mine. You know, like somebody else feels that same way about their kid. And like all life is valuable.
Yep.
Duh. I mean, you know, like our responsibility as people on earth to care for each other.
Yep.
The way that we would want to be cared for. You know, it's just, it makes so much sense to me. And it's really astounding that we don't all abide by that.
Yeah, no. Well, and the more I get to understand brains and how brains work. And I did that episode where we talked about more conservative brains versus more liberal brains. And that pesky amygdala, when it flares up, it tells people who are a little bit more aligned with how we feel that, you know, we need to protect everyone and we need to extend those things to the whole entire world and sometimes aliens, which is my favorite quote from that article. It's like that level of compassion extends to animals and sometimes aliens. which is true. Like, catch yeah, me I would watching totally, E.T. Yes, and no. the when he's looks in the thing and mm-hmm. E.T.'s little heart lights up. Mm-hmm. Don't tell me. Mm-hmm. There are two kinds of people. Right. There are those of us who ugly cry, and there are those of us who blink and
don't care,
move on with their lives. Yeah,
you know.
But yeah, that amygdala, man. And so, yeah, when you're wired that way and it's and you're all hyped up and you've got this family that is like, you know, cult-like in its loyalty to its own self, I get it. I understand mm-hmm. why they are like that, but it's like, good God, at what cost? And like, right. you know, to what end? You know, what are you accomplishing other than this false sense of security that right. you guys can protect each other and that you can just defend each other no matter what heinous shit you do? You know, mm-hmm. that might work for a while, but it's just the karmic balance of things is going to come and get you, and your sister is going to end up missing her in the bay eventually. You know, it's like, right. ugh, you're just yep. attracting so much horribleness. And poor Jason Bass's family just got sucked into your vortex of awful.
Yep. Yep. And blamed and screamed at and threatened. Oof. And killed.
So sorry for them. I can't. You know,
I feel like I should also tell our listeners that on the flip side of my kid trying out like his bully pants or whatever, he also on the way to school today was asking me how much money we have. And spoiler alert, guys, we don't have a lot, but we're fine. You know, whatever. We make ends meet.
Regular amounts.
And so I was like, I don't know. Whatever. We have some money. And he was like, well, what happens if we have like millions or billions of dollars? What would you do then? I was like, that would be nice. And he was like, would we just like go to the grocery store and just like hand out money to anybody who needed it? And I was like, yes. Yes, child, 100%. We would absolutely do that. He was like, because if we already have enough for all of our food, we would want to share the money so everybody has food, right? Yes, we do.
Yeah, bro.
This is not something that I have like, I mean, it's generally how we live our lives, but it's not like I sit down and be like, if we have too much, then we give to others or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not that kind of person, but... I loved it. I was like, oh, I'm so proud of you. Yeah, yes, 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 yes. We will share. If we have an abundance, we will definitely share for sure. And we do anyway. You know, even if we don't have an abundance, we do what we can to make sure that those around us get what they need.
Yeah.
So
he's sharingest kid ever. No,
he really is.
Yeah. Do you want this chocolate? And I'm like, you're five. Five-year-olds, I would never.
Be like, no. Well, he will cry. He will cry if he offers me candy and I don't feel like having a piece of candy. He gets so upset that I won't enjoy it. He's like, but mommy, it's delicious. You'll love it. I know I will. I just don't want candy. It's 6 a.m. I don't feel like chocolate right now. And he'll cry because he's so disappointed that I won't enjoy the delicious mm-hmm. chocolate of him. No, he's mm-hmm. such a sweetheart. He really is. And it's okay that he's having bad behaviors, you know, like not even bad, but just like making kind of not the nicest choices, you know, like I fully believe we can help him get through that. Luckily, he's not like punching or calling them terrible names under his breath that I know of. I mean, but.
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, I'm like forever fantasizing about fighting children on behalf of my nephews if they're mean to him. So.
Well,
I guess I got to look inward a little bit.
I was going to say, neither child has yet been. I think that the oldest is a little bit more sensitive and a little sweeter than his baby brother, but both of them seem to be getting through their young childhood just fine so far.
Yeah, no, when your oldest was pretty small, I was like, oh God, he's going to be really sensitive. And you know, of course I want him to be. I want them to be sensitive people, but I also was like, shit, now, you know, I was kind of bullied as a kid and I just don't want to watch him experience that. Mm-hmm. And then, nope, he came out all fiery and fucking opinionated, just like we like him. So I'm very good.
Standing up for the underdog.
Exactly. I still might have to fight children.
Yes.
But I can like stand down for now.
Right. For now, we're good. He's in a safe space. We'll see what happens when middle school happens.
I mean, honestly, like openly swearing at children in my fantasies. Like, listen, you little fucker. Like, no, that child is hurting. He needs your help, Courtney. But God.
I know. It's true. I went on a field trip recently and was watching that. You could just tell that these kids are the bullies of the second grade. Yep. And one was just being so, like, everything about him, you know, like, I could just see it. I was getting kind of, like, fired up, the look on his face, the way he talked, his actions. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that kid. And then I thought for a second and I was like, no, that's just his dad or whoever. Like, that's just his family member. He's just being his family member. And that made me really sad. And then I was like, gosh, he just needs a hug.
Exactly. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. Anywho, we got to do stuff in our lives today.
Yes, we do. But that was a good story. And that was a devastating story. Yes. And I can't wait for the FBI to hip us to what happened in 2 years from now.
I know.
Oy.
Do we want to do name time? Do you have names?
I have names. Let's do some names.
It's name time.
I haven't explained name time in a couple of episodes, so for those of you who are new to the podcast, if you want to know the origin of name time, go back to the Charlotte Grabby episode and where we discovered Cindy Pancake, and I worked her into the story only because her name was so adorable. She had no real bearing on the case whatsoever, but she was in an episode of Dateline or something that I watched, and
Forensic Files, and a
star was born. And so ever since then, people have been sending us the best, most celebratory, cutest, funniest, funnest names. Reasons for us all to live another day, because people are named things like Mike Litteris.
I feel like that one's come up before, but it for always real. Needs to come up all the time.
For real. I thought so too, but then I was like, maybe Mike Hunt, but I don't know if we've ever had Mike Litteris. And I mean, I got Facebook posts, like we were sent evidence that this is real. Someone's cousin, a listener's like friend's cousin or listener's cousin, Mike Litteris. There's a pediatrician in Linwood, California named Dr. DeCock. Oh my God, there's a Utah LSD lawyer. And I'm assuming that means the like LDS, maybe it's LDS. Yeah, it says LSD, but LDS lawyer.
Who's like, I want to be an LSD lawyer.
I do too. Utah LDS lawyer and extremist Mormon writer named Denver Snuffer. Oh my God, the Snuffer.
That's amazing.
Amazing. There's a country singer named Dick Curlis. Oh, so cute. In the Northern Territory, there is Dick's Pumping Service Pty Ltd. I don't know what Pty, but Dick's Pumping Service.
Yeah.
Sign me up for a subscription.
Is that like a weekly monthly service?
Yeah.
Jokes just never get old.
Never. Especially Dick's.
Dick's pumping service.
Dick subscription.
Like, how many pumps do you get in a session?
That's what I'm going to start referring to.
Oh, shit.
Marriage to
dick.
A marriage is, oh, how's your dick subscription going for you? Not lesbian marriage. Whatever. I'm not going to rule it out. I don't need to.
I'm sure there's plenty of pumping.
Plenty of dick subscriptions and lesbian marriages too. All marriages.
I'm blushing. I'm actively blushing. Sorry, Mom.
I can't bring your mother into this. Okay. There is a... I almost did. I was real close.
No, don't.
There is a stone sales company called Finlay's Stone, and their advertisement is Get Stoned with Tom.
Yeah.
Woo. There's a billboard on the way to Chicago that says something about don't get crack in your basement. Something, it's like it's a joke about like using crack. And I'm like, you need to go back to
the 80s.
Did you run that by anybody before you put it on a billboard on 94 West? God, guys.
God.
Like, I get it, but Come on.
Yeah.
Okay, so another thing in the Northern Territory, other than Dick's pumping service. Oh, this is so funny. The government created a whole PR campaign to get more tourists in, and the slogan was, "See you in the NT," standing for Northern Territory.
Oh,
but
no.
All the merchandise said,
"Cunt.
See you, NT." Yes.
Who didn't they
who?
Show that? Like, who did? Who needs to see that to know that's a terrible idea?
What intern was like, let's just see how far I could take this.
Was it you? It was you.
It would be me. It would have been me. Like when Sadie was on the graduation committee, or was it the prom committee? And you said that the class motto should be, it's a dog eat dog world. And that your class song should be, happy birthday. Did you propose happy
Something
birthday?
Something like that, yeah.
It's a dog eat dog
it's
world.
It's a doggy world. Yeah, doggy. Dog. No.
The man with the world's largest weenie, but just everything going back to Dick's pumping service, his name is Jonah Falcon.
Wait, the largest or smallest?
Largest.
Largest.
Wow. Yes, this thing spans 13.5 inches.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. There's a Wiener Man statue, and it was stolen from a place called Dairy Winkle in West Virginia. That listener understood the assignment last week when I read all of the names of the cities that no one has ever written in and told us about. So good job. Good job sending in the cutest and best name from your state in West Virginia. There's a name, Hope White, but when the name comes through their system, it comes through as White Hope. Comma, the great White Hope. First name, happy, last name, spelled joke, but pronounced Yoka.
Oh.
Either way, happy Yoka. Oh, they also have somebody named Woo Wee.
Oh, man.
Oh, God. The world is great and terrible simultaneously. Both things are true, aren't they?
Yes, they really are.
Speaking of things that are great and not terrible, there are parts of existence that exist that are just great. And do you want to name one of those parts of life?
Our Patreon.
Listeners.
Our supporters who pay us every month for extra bonus episodes.
That's what they do, and we love them for it. So for as little as $5 a month, you can be one of them. And then if you do it in 2 or 3 months, I will sing you a song on air.
It takes a while, so please be patient.
Yes, thank you for being patient. I only have so much of this in me.
Yep.
It exhausts me. It's like when you see on Ghost when Whoopi Goldberg is being inhabited by the spirits, and then she's like, so exhausted afterwards. Yes.
Can't even walk. Yeah. All right, let's exhaust Courtney. Thank you so much to Corey W.
Corey, will you tell me all of your secrets? How do you know how to be so great? How do you wake up and put your pants on and put your shirts on and put your shoes on and go outside and pretend like you're just like everyone else when you're not? You're superior, extraordinary in every way, and also make me want to live another day with everything you put out into the world. Corey, why?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You okay?
Let's take a drink. Who else do we got?
Thank you so much to Jim Wing. I had to do both, all of the names.
Yes, you did. I would like a subscription to that, Jim. I'd like a subscription. I would like a monthly access to Jim and Jim's power, Jim's prowess, Jim's confidence, Jim's kindness, Jim's precociousness, Jim's flawlessness, Jim's excitement, enthusiasm, strength, and poise.
Yes.
Jim is like in a glamour shot in my mind.
Uh-huh.
You know, soft focus.
Yep.
Fist under chin.
Mm-hmm.
Two-thirds profile.
Yes.
You know, just, yep, collar popped, and giving me a knowing look, and we exchange. I'm like, I know, Jim, I get it, thank you.
Thank you. Ding. Thank you so much to Kelly from Kansas.
Kelly, listen, what do you got going on in Kansas? Dogs in baskets. Corn. Lebanon, the geographical center of the United States.
Dogs in baskets because of...
Toto.
Yes. It's like, that was very random, Courtney.
Quick word association. I'm warming up. What was her first name again? Kelly?
Kelly from Kansas.
Lebanon, Kansas, geographical center of the United States, which I think, you know, I think that's a metaphor for a whole lot more in this case when it comes to Kelly. I think we're talking about the geographical center of all of our motherfucking hearts, right?
Yes.
Right there, right in the center. All things lead to Kelly. She's the epicenter, the pinnacle, the meridian, the North Star. She's the beacon that brings us home, calls us back to who we are, what we believe in, where we belong. Put your doggy in your fucking basket. Get your ass back to Kelly.
That's right.
You know?
I was thinking intersection.
Intersection. Venn diagram. What else?
Point. On a map.
Flare in the sky. Latitude and longitude.
That's right. All roads lead.
Perpendicular, not parallel. Just get to Kelly. Come on.
Do it.
When you're feeling unmoored, when you're feeling unsure, when you're feeling uncertain, just go to Kelly. She's got it. She's grounded. Yep. She's focused. She's rooted. Mm-hmm. She's ready.
Yep. She probably gives really good hugs.
Yeah, that's what she's just doing, standing there at the monument that you and I visited when we were teenagers. And we should post the picture of it with this episode.
Yes.
Of us being
jerks.
Yes. At this geographical center of the United States, a.k.a. Kelly's heart.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you so much, Kelly. Last but not least.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to Carla D.
Carla. Ding-a-ling-a-dang-dong-ding-a-dang-dong. Ding-a-ling-a-dang-dong, sing me that song. Carla, you know what I'm talking about. Carla, you know that I gotta shout out. The fact that you are beautiful. The fact that you are loved. The fact that you are one of a kind, and you will always rise above. Even
be on
when you
my
don't
mind.
Be on my mind.
That's where I was going with that.
What? Does it rhyme with above, love? Be on my mind. Be on my mind. You always be on my mind. Come on, Sadie. Be on my mind. Be on my mind. Carla will always be on my mind. We love you, Carla. We love you all so much. And if you want to spend more time with us, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and YouTube at They Will Kill. You can go to our website, theywillkill.com. You can send us an email at theywillkillpodcast@gmail.com.
That's right. You can rate and review and subscribe to us if you want to.
Yes, please. It's been a minute since we got a review, so who's up to bat? Who's next? Who's going to take one for the team? Who's going to get on Apple Podcasts?
Right.
Hope to go for
back.
The best.
I think I probably reviewed us like back day one, way back. So I should see. Otherwise, I'm going to give us our own review.
I don't think I've ever reviewed
things.
Us.
I've got some things to say about this podcast.
Yes. We're like, it creeps me out when they giggle so much. I know. We know. We know. Get it.
We're sorry.
We're neurodivergent. We didn't know that at the beginning. We would have prefaced this whole thing with... It's a coping mechanism.
Because we're uncomfortable with what we're saying.
And it's unbelievable to people like us that things like this happen. And so we laugh because we are trying to cope. And we're sorry that it comes across as creepy. Maybe learn about nuance of human emotion.
Turns out we really feel things very strongly. And it's also a way to cope with that because if we dive in too deeply, then we want to die sometimes about it.
All that to say, no, we're actually dicks. We think it's hilarious. We think it's super funny. It's fucking hilarious. That's my review. It'll just be you and I going back and forth over the like major point of contention about this podcast. In one review.
Oh, Lord. Thanks, AJ. Hey, AJ Bergans.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your music. We love it.
We love it so much.
And remember...
Oh, God, I had one this morning. Something about... Oh, you know what? Just if you're a yogurt person in the morning, you like yogurt for breakfast, hot tip. For if you want a little superfood boost, stir some fucking chia seeds right in the yogurt. You don't need chia pudding. That shit's like gag fuel. I mean, I love chia pudding, but
it goes.
Nobody's trying to.
Like it's easy to go wrong with that real quick.
Yeah, especially you know, you can only eat that for so many days in a row until your gag reflex kicks in officially and forever. So, you know, I know we're all trying to better ourselves, but I think I invented. I'm 100% sure that I'm the only person who's ever stirred chia seeds
in their yogurt.
I was just making it this morning thinking, you know, people need to know this tip. You get your fiber, you get your fucking protein. It holds its weight in water, so you get more full. Try it. It sustains you throughout. I mean, I swear by it. I swear by it. You're welcome.
Oh, man, we love you all so much for being here and listening
to us. So very much.
And we are going to see you again very soon.
We love you. Couldn't love you more. And goodbye.
Goodbye.
I'm journalist Carolyn Osorio, and I invite you to join me and my co-host, Brandon Morgan, on our podcast, Criminal Mischief. From law enforcement officers seeking justice to victims' families seeking answers, every week there's a new case and a new victim whose story deserves to be told. New episodes of Criminal Mischief drop every Tuesday.